Call to order the Friday, March 22nd, 2013, Joint Emergency Communication Services Association Policy Board meeting. Looks like Don is here in Dave Wilson's spot, Terrence Nugel for Sheriff Pulcraba, and Michelle Payne for Susan Mims. Other than that, everybody else is here. Okay, item 2 is action to approve the minutes of January 25th, 2013. Does anybody have any corrections, additions, deletions, or any action with the minutes?
Move to approve.
Moved by Lundell to approve.
Second.
Second by Michelle Payne. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
I'll abstain.
I voted aye, sorry.
Okay. So the minutes are approved.
You saw me nod, right?
I did. Item 3 is comments from the public, and I don't see any public, so I guess we won't have any comments from the public. So we'll move on to item 4, Executive Director's Report and Update. Tom?
I'll give you guys the newest update here from this morning that just occurred last night. I'm on about 2.5 hours sleep, so just bear with me. We had UPSs go down here last night due to one had a faulty internal. It's an uninterrupted power supply. It's our battery backup.
Okay, because
that's true. The UPSs run the battery backup, which is the in between for our power between commercial power / generator to the network. Back on March 2nd, an inverter failed on one of them, which put it into a type of internal software bypass where it's basically letting commercial power straight through. And the second one, because they are running in parallel to compensate the load, it does the same thing. Basically, at that point, if you would see any interruption from your commercial service, your outside Mid-American Alliant Energy, any blip at all, just short hiccups, would have shut that down. It didn't alert us. It's not like it sends out a message that says, and these are in this degraded state. And so they went into this state. Last night, we took a blip at about 9:50. And so for about 15 minutes, roughly, we were without power. And so when Raycom and myself, we kind of pulled in about the same time, we got the power restored. But in the meantime, we had all the phones roll over, everything automatically rolls over, so radio system was fine, never skipped a beat. But the building itself out here was no power. So the tech came on site, we got one of them back up and running, and parts are being driven from Atlanta, Georgia as we speak. They will be here this afternoon. And both systems will be back online. It's kind of a freak thing because both of your redundant objects, you know, took that hit. And the tech also, contrary to what a previous tech told us, he's also going to work on today getting the alerts sent out on that. He said that the previous tech could give us incorrect information as far as the systems being able to alert us when they go in that alarm state. So the UPSs have two levels of failure built into them. It's just we met that second level last night, unbeknownst to anyone. But again, it's spring break. I hate to say fortunate because the last year's summer incident at 4 in the morning, or 4:30 in the morning. But like I said, we got here right away. We got power restored. We didn't really miss a beat here. It's just, you know, that happened. So that's kind of the latest and greatest. I've got kind of a timeline and some things I have to type up about it. Our biggest focus was just getting everybody back online and getting everything up and running.
So, Tom, the generator wouldn't kick in either?
The generator wouldn't. At that point, they're not relative because we had commercial power was restored. So the UPS was blocking any power through them onto the rest of the equipment.
So is it an inverter problem? Or?
It was an inverter problem in the UPS. Yeah.
So if the old tech told you there was no way to alert you, how do you ever find it?
In that case,
is there like a random check?
Yeah, you would have had to manually, you know, just be in this room and have reason to kind of go in the UPS room and check. I mean, these things have never done that. Their maintenance had just occurred. Got a clean bill of health on them on March 1st, and they usually just, those guys just run. And so it's a situation where...
For some reason, I'm thinking that when the building was first built, we had that problem too. Because I remember talking to Dave about power issues. I thought it was similar to what you're describing. Do you remember?
I don't. Have
you, were you here then?
No, 09, before it was open, yeah. I mean, okay. I'd have been here the first year we were building and all. We've had some, we had some ice storm, you know, an ice build on the lines and causing them to whip, and so we had that, but...
This was an internal issue. It was, I mean, it was a blip on the Mid-American system, but it was an internal issue that happened.
I'd have to read.
Seems like a weird night to lose power. It's not like anything. I mean,
it was a great time. No time's great.
No. I just meant there was no weather.
Yeah. No. Mid-American did have some issues on the other side of Iowa City last night. They actually had some lines arcing. But nothing on our end of the town. So we probably just took a typical, just short blip in service. It wasn't a spike. It wasn't a surge. It's just that service dropped for that quick second. And that was enough to then close these UPSs down until you manually bypassed commercial power through them. Otherwise, they were in a blocking state. So... We were able to identify that immediately, so that was the best part of it.
So what's a manual? What has to actually physically happen?
So the UPSs were in a blocking state, so you have to put...
So it's blocked because the inverter is signaling that it's not working.
Yeah, and so the software piece then internally puts it on straight commercial power through it. If a commercial power blip then goes, then because of the way that, in their standard setting, if... for some reason you lose commercial power at that point, they just go into like a blocking state until they can manually be restarted. Well, in the meantime, so you manually restart it, you put one of them in and bypass and let commercial power go through to feed your network.
So somebody physically has to come in here and flip a switch?
In our case, yeah.
Yeah, really?
We did. Yeah. Now, you hope this new monitoring, they're going to get us where we get alerted, so when it goes into like, I'll call it a stage one alert, or step one alert, we'll get that. We'll be able to address it immediately before it goes into a two.
So this is the second problem you've had with this inverter.
This is really the first major UPS thing that's happened that I guess I can remember. I figured while I'm, you know, tightening everything up, we've been in communication every day overnight. I figured it's best, you know, you guys hear about it first thing this morning rather than wait it out.
How much will it cost to fix, do you know?
It's all covered.
Oh, it's under warranty?
That's why I chose to utilize the feature of it that if they have to drive from Atlanta, they'll drive from Atlanta to bring us the parts and fix us today. I mean, it's part
Terrence would have volunteered to go.
You know,
if you'd fly him.
Yeah, just to get a warm weather for a little bit.
So we need a second tier of redundancy.
Well, no, we have it. It's built in. The second tier is built into it. We just, because that's when it goes into that, when the inverter failure goes, it goes into what's called static bypass. At that point, the UPS is still function, power goes through, but if you take a commercial power hit, because that's what's feeding it slowly at that point, the batteries are out of the picture at that point. Then that's where you have, if you have a second blip, then you lose them.
So we did have double redundancy, it just failed.
That's just it, yeah. That is just it. The if you read any odds about having redundant systems both at the same time go, you are one, your chances of being struck, actually we've researched, your chances struck by lightning are better.
Wow, yeah, this is really phenomenal.
You better buy a lottery ticket.
The good news is all the rest of stuff works. I mean, all the other stuff stayed in place. I mean, this building was essentially what was on. Everybody else was operational. It's just this building wasn't. So, you know, we shipped resources to the backup site. They were already covering the radio. Phones were already rolling. I mean, we don't miss anything otherwise. It's just this building itself. So
how did we discover it again? It was just...
Lights went out.
Lights went out. That'd be as simple as the lights went out, right?
Yeah, coffee machine.
Okay.
Yeah. So we got a couple panic phone calls last night.
So Tom, is there a possibility that it's so rare, but in
instead of having a manual turn on, why don't you have a redundant system set up to turn it on?
You know, I'll inquire about how they can self-restart, but he last night just said they require to have a manual startup. You shouldn't have to get, I mean, that's why, because basically you're at the end of what should never happen. That's why it's a manual process.
Yeah.
Well,
you are at the very end.
If it wasn't manual, I suppose you could have something that you could surge power into an unstable situation.
And that's how you do it.
So, I mean, you need the human element at
it
was.
You had to manually do that. That's what we did at that point last night.
Well, it seems that this alert is the...
Alert's the key, and we're going to look into that. We got hardware in place that he's just going to verify. Again, our first tech that originally set us up said, no, this doesn't work. He had us all convinced it can't be done. I've made phone calls, and the new tech that's taking care of us basically ever since year one. He's going to relook into that situation. So that kind of leads me into part two, Harris maintenance. Harris has been here. I've been updating you folks since that January meeting when they started. They've been around January, February, March, 1 week each month, because this is the upgrade to get us on the same version as Linn County. So this is the complete system overhaul, where we received the new hardware in January that I reported about, that was all paid for by Linn County's upgrade. Now they've been coming back in February and then again this week to go ahead and update the software pieces to that. They have themselves ran into some issues this week, so they are staying. They've worked every night this week, and they will be staying now through the weekend and the next week to resolve it instead of come back at a different time, because they've already started it. They want to just, they're on their last third of the equipment to upgrade, so they're going to stay and finish that out. So hopefully by the end of next week, we'll be completely up to date on our Harris software with the version that Linn County will be going live with. February 25th, I attended a board and commissioner training that was put on by Johnson County. It's kind of a good meeting. Any time you can take a couple things away. It was mainly new for people that do open meetings, record requests, kind of a new board and commission type deal. But there's a lot of us in the room that, you know, like me, that works with boards, and just to get the information about open meetings and open records was a good class to sit through. And that was put on again. Johnson County put that on, and a good, two dozen people in there, I'd say, is full. And then
most of the Tiffin Council.
Yeah, that's
most they heard about it and requested to come.
Yeah, most of their staff, city staff, was there. On March 1st, I included in your packet, received a letter from the Corridor Business Journal that was on behalf of the Eastern Iowa chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. They heard about our LEED certification last year, and so they invited me to accept a certification award presented by the Eastern Iowa chapter to honor our LEED certification. And they're doing this at their annual symposium on April 10th at Kirkwood Hotel. So I have, like I said, included a copy of that letter and plan to attend and accept that award from them for our efforts. And that's probably missing something, but that's the update from the last couple of months, really.
Any questions for Tom on anything?
John? It wouldn't be a policy board meeting without me asking about the status of the sign.
Yeah.
There's no sign anymore, Terrence, out at the road, if you notice.
I think the last time I was here, you mentioned it.
Yeah.
That every time.
Yeah. He doesn't like the little blue one.
It's hard to see.
It is hard to see. So you're going to check on that again?
Yeah.
I'm sure. I don't know how many meetings I have left this year, but...
That'll be John's. We're going to get that in honor of John.
Okay.
Before you leave the policy board?
Yeah.
Anything else then? Okay, we'll move along to item 5, which is the financial audit from fiscal year 2012, and we have our auditor here, so have at it.
I'm Mike Podliska from Anderson Larkin,
I was here, what, 6 months ago?
That's probably about right.
Anyway, I'm going to report a little bit on the audit for the year ended June of 12. Inside your little packet, you should have a loose letter, and we're going to talk about that real quickly. We spent quite a little bit of time on this last year, or the last time I was here, as a result of some audit issues in the CPA world, basically Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, all of those accounting things that happened several years back. The people that tell us how to do audits determined that auditors weren't doing a very good job of communicating information to the people that govern the organizations that we're auditing. That's you guys. Anyway, so this is very much a boilerplate letter. Basically, they're saying that certain things have to be communicated to the board. And I'm not really going to go through the letter. If you want to read through it, basically you're going to read a whole lot of, no, they didn't do that. No, I didn't see that. No, there's no instances of that. Whenever you read no, in this case, that's a good thing. Basically, there's no significant audit adjustments that we made. We didn't have any difficulties working with Tom and his staff when we came to do the audit. And that's what we hoped for. Okay? In the audit itself, if you would turn to page 2, this is the independent auditor's report, just kind of a explanation of what an audit is, what rules we followed, what conclusions we came to. First paragraph, we audited the accompanying financial statements. Second paragraph, we conducted our audit in accordance with U.S. generally accepted auditing standards and government auditing standards. Those two sets of standards, U.S. generally accepted auditing standards, are the rules that you follow if you're auditing any entity in the United States, whether it's a government or a nonprofit or a for-profit business. Government auditing standards are unique to local governments and also some nonprofits, and so those are the rules that we followed. Fourth paragraph, let's say third paragraph. One thing that I need to point out is we do an audit of JEC, which is attached to Johnson County, but the numbers that we're going to talk about here in a minute just relate to you guys. It doesn't have anything to do with the cash and the investments that the county has, even though that they're your primary funder. Okay? Fourth paragraph, in our opinion, the financial statements referred to above present fairly. Okay? There's three kinds of, that's the audit opinion. There's three kinds of opinions you can get. They present fairly, they don't present fairly, or the records are so bad we can't even tell. So, as you can imagine, present fairly is the one that we want to have. And present fairly means that when we look at the numbers, that's a clear picture of what actually happened. Okay? It doesn't mean you're super efficient in what you do, or you make a lot of money, or you lose a lot of money. It's just that when we look at the numbers, that's a fair picture of what actually happened. Okay? Turn to page 7. By the way, if you have questions, please jump right in. Otherwise, I know that you're seeing this for the first time. If you get back home and you're looking at something, you don't understand something, please give me a call. You guys pay us X amount of dollars every year to do this audit, and part of that is normal question and answer stuff. Okay? On page 7, about a third of the way down the page, we have a subtotal total assets, $20,642,000. That is a decrease of about $2.6 million from the previous year. Okay? And at first glance, $2.6 million decrease in assets doesn't sound very good, but most of that, $2.1 million, is as a result of taking depreciation on the system and the building and all the stuff that you have. So regardless of what is going on in the business, these assets that you have are going to depreciate in value. Okay? So the assets went down $2.6 million, but $2.1 million of it is something that, regardless of what this entity does, they're going to decrease. Okay? Total liabilities, the next subtotal, $3.4 million. That's an increase of about $300,000 from the previous year, and the number smack dab in the middle of that section, seceding your property taxes, accounts for pretty much all of that. And if you're not familiar with how governments in Iowa work, we follow the rules that the state auditor puts out, and they say if you do an audit in the state of Iowa, you have to follow certain rules. And one of the things they did, well, as long ago as I can remember, is they have us set up as a receivable the property taxes that you guys are going to get next fiscal year. So the property taxes that you guys are getting right now is set up as a liability, but because of how budgets work in the state of Iowa, we set that same receivable up also as deferred revenue, which is the seceding your property tax. So the fact that the liabilities went up $0.3 million because of seceding your property tax really basically means that that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing because you're going to be getting $300,000 more in property taxes than you did in the previous year. Okay? Page 8 is the statement of activities. The first column on the left, total expenses, $5,596,000. That's an increase of about $400,000 from the previous year, and most of that has to do with, well, the majority of the organization's expenses are three things. You pay your people to do the work. You have depreciation on the system, which I mentioned earlier was about $2.1 million, and then you pay contract people to do things for you. And that's where the majority of the increase is. The contract payments in the current year went up about $400,000 from the previous year. Okay, next column over, operating grants, contributions, and restricted interest, $23,000. You guys had, I think, about a $100,000 grant that you got the money and you spent it over the course of a couple of years. Last year, fiscal year 11, you spent about $77,000. The remaining $23,000 was spent in fiscal year 12. The change in net assets, which is the right-hand column, the third number from the bottom, basically that's the profit or net profit or net loss of the business over the course of the year. The business lost $2.9 million, but keep in mind that $2.1 million of that is depreciation, something you guys have no control over. You spent all this money to build this thing, and now we're spreading the cost of the building and the system out over several years. Okay? The only other thing I was going to mention, and we talked about this last year, page 21, last page in the book. These are the findings that when we came and did the audit, you know, something's, not that it's wrong, but it maybe we could do something a little bit better, or there's something that you're not doing that as an auditor I think maybe you should be doing. Segregation of duties, payroll approval, and bond coverage. Okay, if you were sitting in this room the last time I was here, those were the same three things we talked about. Well, the problem was, or not the problem, I didn't come and present the audit for fiscal year 11 until, what, August of 12? So the whole next fiscal year had already ended. So you hadn't fixed the problems because the year had already ended. You couldn't fix them during the fiscal year 12, okay? So segregation of duties, we talked about last year. That's basically something that the majority of the people that we audit get this comment. It has to do with the fact that you've got a small administrative staff, so we can't properly spread out the duties because we just don't have enough people to do it. So Tom has the ability to write a check. He also has the ability to approve that check or approve the bill for payment. So in theory, he could do something he's not supposed to. I don't have any evidence that happened, but that's the example. Okay? So, regardless of what you guys do, short of hiring, you know, 20 more administrative staff people, which fiscally isn't feasible,
you're going to continue to have this.
Aren't we having the chair take care of it?
Yes.
So we've addressed this by involving the chair.
Sure.
So explain to us how you changed it.
Well, if you, after this meeting he's talking about, when they went through the recommendation and you guys acted on that, was part of, so we prepare the bills, and actually the segregations when Kathy started, now I am not approving invoices and signing same checks. So she fills out the vouchers, emails them to Psalm, he approves them, and then we submit them for to issue the check to the accountant. And then when they come back, I sign the check and just verify that everything matches on the invoice. And that's how we segregated that out.
So if that was our response now to this audit,
next year.
Sounds much better.
Yeah, and next year is when he said we will get that
credit.
Sure,
yeah.
Do you just have this procedure now written out in a procedure that you do?
Not really written. It's you guys outlined it in your
right. I
in the
just
in the board.
It up,
yeah.
So it's part of our operating procedure.
We'll just copy it out of the minutes and. But yeah, that's so. Now next year when he audits us, we get credit for our new.
Sure,
that's right.
New procedure.
Right. Payroll approval. We talked about the board not approving payroll prior to that payroll being made. I'm not real sure what the progress on that is, if there is any progress.
I'd have to go back and look at the same minutes.
I mean, because we don't meet every month, and people need to be paid every 2 weeks.
Sure.
I thought that we had discussed that the chair would do this, and maybe we just haven't got that done yet.
Yeah, we haven't gotten that far.
But I think you could use basically the same procedure, right? Have the chair approve the payroll.
Mm-hmm. Last comment, surety bond or fidelity bond coverage, and I talked to Tom actually last week, and you
actually
got some
next agenda item
quotes or something on that. So that's all I've got. Like I said, if you get home and are digging through this and something just doesn't make sense to you, please give me a call. I'm not going to send you a bill as a result of that. That's part of what you guys pay us for, and so. I guess I just need one signature from Tom, and I'll get out of here.
Very good. Any questions? Always here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And just to follow up on the bills, I do get an email.
Some extras and copies of letters.
At least once a week. And it's usually a fairly small list, so it's easy to look at.
Right.
It's not a big, long.
So if we just add payroll to that, then I think we clean up this whole audit.
I think you're right.
Simple enough.
We'll take care of the bonding in a minute.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good
day.
Thanks,
Ryan. Good to see you.
Thank you. Anything else on the audit, anybody? Okay, we'll move on to item 6, discussion and update on additional insurance coverage options. Tom?
So
moving slow today, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's all right. And I'm doing some work. Wrapping up, I put a summary in your packets as well on this agenda item. And so I did meet with our insurance agent to get some information about the surety bond, which is basically the dishonesty bond or, employee theft type bonds that the auditor was talking about. And basically, the insurance rep said, we do have a small amount built in, and I outlined this in there, for a crime which has a limit of $25,000. It includes coverage for employee theft, money, securities. And this would have to do, it also involves theft of your pension plans and carries a zero deductible. But the insurance rep quoted us the following umbrella coverage options to add to that, basically because of the request, the auditor's recommendation was a $100,000 policy. The insurance rep recommendation is a $500,000 policy. And so that pricing I outlined in your packet there, what a $100,000 employee theft and $100,000 forgery alterations coverage with $5,000 deductible would be an additional $690 a year. And I laid out the $500,000 is $1,201. And $1 million plan is $2,402. So these premiums would be addition to any current ones that we have in place. And again, our auditor who just left had recommended the $100,000 level based on our exposure from what they audit and what they see, what their recommendation would be. And again, the insurance rep, based on what he sees for our budget and our operation exposure, he recommends a $500,000 plan. So with that, those are the coverage options that we expanded on. Basically, existing is only 25. They'd like to see us get up to around 100 and or 500. There's a recommendation you take. And so those are the options I went out and got and wanted to present to you folks for direction or how to proceed with. Or any questions?
You know, when I read this, it seemed hard to imagine how anyone in this smaller organization could steal even up to the $25,000 coverage that we have. But I suppose the more I thought about it, I guess over time, if someone was sneaky and they did it for a period of 2 or 3 years, you could probably get over $25,000.
Did you see the city clerk recently?
Or Dixon, Illinois.
Yeah, a small, little, tiny budget, like the size of Oxford's budget. What's your annual budget?
Well, that could vary a lot, $800,000.
Yeah.
I don't know how much pull they that off.
Oh, it's like 300 and
yeah.
thousand or something. In Dixon, Illinois, what was it?
Millions.
Wow. Okay. So I guess there's ways to do it.
Well, not if,
they didn't think they had that money laying around either. There's all sorts of scams.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think we at least need this 100,000. I don't know about Bob Saunders' recommendation of $500,000. And he's been watching all the...
This one's actually... He does everything, but we split out half of it. So we do half with Bob and half with A.W. Alden Briscoe.
Okay.
This one's A.W. Alden Briscoe's right.
Well,
I'm sorry.
You know, I'm sure they're watching all these little arrests of all these little city clerks, and fire department was one of a fire... I mean, and they're like, you know, if you can get it out of that, why couldn't you get it out of this budget? But I don't know.
What's the difference in premium?
The $690 versus $1,201. So about half, roughly. A little under half. It seems to be convenient, about 50% for each level, 100 to 500 to a million.
It's only money.
Now, like I said again, I'm just...
Which isn't budgeted, you'll have to find.
Correct. And the insurance already went up anyway because... We don't get the quotes before the budget comes out, so we're already roughly 3,000 behind this year's premium we're going to find, because by the time we got our renewals, our budget's approved, before the renewals actually came out, we got re-rated, so, you know, we did have a claim, but from the lightning strike, you all remember 2011, heard about out here, so we had some equipment we had to pay for up front, and they got reimbursed. But anyway, like I said, the main thing was I took the auditor's recommendation and the insurance agent's recommendation and presented it based on what they felt our level exposure was.
You know, we could probably start at the lower level and then next year reevaluate and go up if we thought it was necessary.
Put it in the budget.
And that's what's recommended by them.
That was their recommendation. So you'd have essentially $125,000, right? Because this will be an umbrella over your existing 25 that we have in place.
I just remind everybody in these places that have been caught with all this fraud, they were audited every year too. Mm-hmm. Auditors don't catch it all either.
Which is why the redundant, I mean, separation of things are so important. I don't know, I would go with what the auditor said, and then before we deal with the budget again, to kind of analyze our risk management, the overall budget, and see if we could, you know, make sure we're covered where we're comfortable.
Is that a motion?
Sure.
Support.
Now we're going to have fraud, and it's all going to be my fault.
So we have
it's affirmed.
A motion and a second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll go with the 100,000.
What's good about us is we have two auditors, essentially, audit us all the time, so we don't write our own checks out of the building, so it makes it kind of nice.
Okay, we'll move along to other business. I have one quick note. Some of you might have gotten a call from the Press Citizen relative to a rumor.
I sent them to you.
Right. And the rumor was that Tom Jones had been fired.
Well,
So I talked to the press and told them that wasn't the case. And at that point, they weren't really...
It was a voluntary resignation.
Well, they weren't... they weren't really interested in any other...
Before you get insurance, I'm leaving.
So, they didn't really care about any of the other operations that go on within the JIC other than the big guy. So
I said, you have that news wrong, but you should call Tom.
Yeah.
Oh. Either Tom, actually.
Well, I know Susan got a call, too, so...
How recent was that?
I didn't get a call.
That was,
last week?
Yeah, Thursday?
You were on his, distribution list.
It was an anonymous call that they received. What
I think happened was that somebody, a friend of somebody, called the press, and they didn't exactly have details correct. And so Lee says, you mean Tom Jones? And the guy says, yeah, I think that was the name. That's where it ended, so.
Or maybe it was the singer.
This is going to be terrific.
So does anybody else have any other business they want to bring up then?
No, but I think that's a good reminder that, you know, our protocol should be that when we get those personnel types of calls, refer them back. If it doesn't involve Tom, it goes to Tom. If it does involve Tom, it goes to the other Tom.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I just left him a message and said, you have it wrong, call either Tom.
Yeah, I think that's way appropriate. No other business then? Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Yep.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.